Welcome to the Open House podcast site, available at openhousecommunity.com.au.
In a couple of days' time, Victoria will be marking 3 years to the day since the Black Saturday bushfires. 400 individual fires raged through the state. That day saw the highest loss of life in Australia from a bushfire. 173 people died, 414 were injured as a result of the fires. The pain, the heartache, the loss remains raw 3 years on for so many people who've lost loved ones, homes, businesses and so much more. You will rarely hear such a personal story of absolute heartbreak, yet hope in the midst of such loss, as from my next guest on Open House. Jane Bayliss and her husband Owen lost their house at Kinglake, virtually everything, on February 7, 2009. More than that, she lost her mum and dad at Kinglake. And the public nature of that loss made it all the more painful, for her dad was Brian Naylor, the long-time legendary Channel 9 newsreader in Melbourne. Brian died with his wife, Moiree, on Black Saturday. Jane, welcome to Open House.
Thank you, Lee.
I must pay a huge tribute to you that you're prepared to speak with us at this time about all this. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for the invitation.
Tell us about the various stages before we go back to the day that you've been through over these last 3 years.
It's been a bit of a roller coaster ride emotionally, but lots of wonderful aspects as well. The first 12 months, there were lots of things to do due to our losses. And there were lots of things that had to be organised. And so we were very busy in the first 12 months. I think I went through my intense, true grieving at about the 18-month mark. And a lot of people have said the same sort of thing.
And what do you think that was?
I think just because there was so much to do initially, at about the 18-month mark, the reality and the true grieving of what we'd lost really hit. And that definitely was the case for me. It was just an absolute outpouring of my emotion and my losses.
Because the losses were at two levels, loss of material things, but loss of loved ones as well.
Absolutely. But it helps you get that material aspect into perspective. You really do see that as not an important thing in your life. It is the people in your life that is the main priority in relation to those two aspects.
That's a good lesson for good times and bad times as well.
Absolutely.
At what stage in that week of February 2009 did you realise this was going to be really bad?
There had been lots of forecasts that the weather was going to be potentially incredibly dangerous. So I think most people were aware, but it wasn't until the actual day and the actual afternoon.
Yes.
I suppose when I got a phone call from a friend that said the fire was in my parents' road and at my sister-in-law's place, which is half a kilometre down the road from Mum and Dad's.
This about mid-afternoon?
You lose sort of the concept of time.
Yes, I'm sure.
For that actual day, but I suspect it was probably about 2:30-ish when I got that phone call from a friend.
I'm in your hands to take us through what you went through that afternoon. It was with Owen, your husband, and three kids.
Mm-hmm. We'd been out in the morning because it was my nephew's birthday on that day, and he had tragically lost his dad very suddenly in an ultralight aircraft accident 9 months before.
This is your brother.
This is my gorgeous youngest brother, who I loved very dearly and had a close relationship with, yeah. So that was a very sudden, very unexpected passing of him. And I'm so thankful that I was blessed to spend a lot of time with him and had a really great relationship with him. And we'd spend a lot of time with his two boys and his wife. And on his eldest son's birthday, we'd always gone boating together as his birthday celebration, and that was on Black Saturday. And so he'd been asking us all week, you know, can we go, can we go? So it was a bit of a decision as to whether we do go, knowing what the forecast was.
Yes.
And then we thought, well, you know, he suffered so many losses, and so we wanted to support him in that way. So we decided we would go. And that's where we were. And then we got a text at about 2 o'clock in the afternoon, I think, from one of our son's friends who was with us also, saying about fires in Wallen, come home. We packed up very quickly and headed off. And our son, who was 18 at the time, headed off too, but he sort of got a bit waylaid. He thought, no, this is no big deal. So he and his mates actually went to a swimming pool on the way home. Oh. And, yeah, they were having a lovely time. And he still says, I don't quite know why I got out of the pool to check my phone, but he did. And, of course, there were all these messages saying, come home now.
Yes.
We need you. As he was driving home, there was a huge wall of fire. I've since seen photos, and the big gum trees look small in the photo. The flames were just hundreds of metres high. And that was about 400 metres away from him, and he was driving at very excessive speeds. And he said cars were passing him.
Wow.
But we just feel that that was all very much in God's timing too, because he got to the intersection at Kinglake West and was stopped there and told that he couldn't keep coming back to our place. And he said, I've got to get home. I've got to get to my mum and dad. And they said, it's too dangerous. You can't go. You have to turn around and go back where you have come from. And Cam just looked at the guy and said, mate, I can't go back there. There's this huge wall of fire, and it's going to be here in about 30 seconds' time. And the guy was just totally amazed. They didn't realise that there was a fire coming from that direction.
Did he make it back home?
He did, and amazingly, there were a whole line of cars that they were going to send into that fire front. And so I praise God that Cam got there in time to tell them not to send them there. Mm. So they got to a safe haven at a fire station only a couple of kilometres away, and Cam got home to us, which was wonderful.
And you spoke to your dad.
I did, which I'm so thankful for. After we'd got this call from a friend, I straight away phoned Dad, and thankfully he answered the phone, and he sounded okay. I said to him, Dad, you be careful, and he said, we'll be right. It's at the top of the driveway, and they had quite a long driveway, and it's burning away from us. We'll be okay. Mum was there saying, who is it? And Dad said, it's Jane. And I said, tell Mum to wet some blankets. Yeah, soak them in the bath and wet them so that you can put them around them. And that's what she was doing.
And at what time was that?
Probably about 3 o'clock, 3:15, something like that.
And when would the fire have hit them?
Not too long after that, because the wind suddenly dramatically changed direction and went from burning away from them right to them, and then was heading our way. I actually think their house got fireballed, because I've heard other people say that that's what they actually saw happening. So it would have been extremely quick.
And you're watching your house burn down.
Well, when we got home, we couldn't actually see flames, but the smoke was just incredibly thick. And the noise of what was coming was like 6 jumbo jets landing next to you.
Yeah.
And we were gathering a few things, and because it was such a hot day and I'd been boating, I had, you know, singlet top and shorts on, and Owen was saying to me, get some warm clothes on. Well, by the third time of him, he was yelling at me, get some warm clothes on. It just wasn't registering. I just sort of went numb. And then it was when we were actually home, I remember standing on the front doorstep, and that wind change was so sudden and so strong. And shortly after that, Owen said to me, you go, you need to get in the car and go. And I just looked at him and I said, Dale, I can't go without you. I just can't go on my own. And within the space of a minute, it wasn't safe to go.
No.
So, yeah, so then we each got in a vehicle and drove down the paddock over the dam bank, parked on the other side of the dam, got out of the cars and got in the dam. And from there, we watched our house burn and, yeah.
What was going through your mind as you sat in that dam?
There was a brief time when the smoke was so thick and Cam and I were having a bit of trouble breathing from the intensity of the smoke. The sky went pitch black. I mean, the darkest, darkest night you could imagine. And there was a brief time where I thought, I don't know if we are going to survive this. So I was just pouring my heart out to God, asking him to protect us, to stop the wind. It was just surreal.
Do you enter another kind of level of consciousness almost?
Absolutely.
But also with a fair amount of fear, no doubt.
Yes, fear, but it was sort of numbing. It was surreal, really. You knew what you were looking at, you knew what was around you, but it was like, this can't really be happening. You know, it was bizarre.
And yet it was.
Mm.
So at what stage did you realise something wrong has gone on with Mum and Dad?
That actually wasn't until the next day, morning, but we'd already heard, amazingly, we were able to talk to our children, adult girls, on the phone, which was just incredible. And they had already heard of friends of ours, two of their children had died. And so they were aware that this had caused lives to be lost. Yeah. And so they were so thankful to have been able to speak with us. The next morning, Owen went to the centres at Kinglake and Kinglake West, and I was heading down to our second daughter's place, and our son was also, and we said to him, can you call into Whittlesea and see if Mum and Dad are there? And I was just living in hope that, you know, they'll be right, they will have gone somewhere, they'll be fine. So I was just living in hope. But then when I met up with Cam, he said, no, they weren't at Whittlesea. But it wasn't until about 4 o'clock, I think, in the afternoon that Owen came down to our daughters. And I'll never forget our first daughter's response. She opened the door and she screamed when she saw O, because he was just covered in black. And all you could see were these white eyes. And she got such a fright.
Oh, dear.
And then
Owen, the bogeyman.
Yes. Who is this man standing at the door? And then O had actually been to Mum and Dad's place, which I think is so courageous,
yes,
of him, and such a loving gift for me to have done that, because he didn't really know what he was going to find. But he said to me afterwards that he knew it wasn't going to be good because their cars were still there. So I think that was just amazing of him to do that. And that's when we reality hit. It had actually been confirmed.
On Open House, we're with Jane Baylis as we approach the third anniversary of the Black Saturday bushfires. We're the day after, Jane, and Owen's gone to your Mum and Dad's property, and he tells you that it looks grim.
Yeah, it had actually been confirmed. And then it wasn't that long after that that it was all across the news.
Of course.
So I was sitting at my daughter's place and, yeah, there it was. And I actually really felt for Peter Hitchener and Tony Jones, who were doing the presentation, because they had a very close relationship with
Old
Dad.
Mates. And yes.
Yep. So they were struggling a bit with, you know, the reality of what had happened.
Was it more difficult to see it played out so publicly?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. They didn't actually mention my situation in the news story. They mentioned my sister-in-law, who had also lost her house, as if she hadn't lost enough already.
And again, we should note, lost her husband, your brother, 9 months before in that ultralight.
Mm-hmm.
What a year.
Oh, unbelievable, yes. So just huge losses for her as well. And one of the presenters knew her and spoke about her. And I must admit, I was sitting there going, it was my mum and dad. And I got very emotional at that stage.
Yes.
Yeah.
Tell me how you coped with all this on the back of your brother's death. And now this.
Absolutely couldn't have coped in my own strength. It has absolutely been God's faithfulness to me, just his loving presence, his guidance has just been amazing. That doesn't mean that there haven't been times where there have been low points, but even in the midst of the hardest times, God has still drawn me to him, and he's revealed the truth of his enabling and his love, even through the worst of my grieving. And I've learnt a lot. I've learnt a lot about God, and he really has grown my faith through what he's allowed me to go through.
Never said, why me?
That actually really surprises me as well, but no, I haven't. I think because I've been so aware of God's presence with me, I've just, even though I haven't understood a lot of why initially, in time I have seen God working his purposes in my life and in other people's lives through this tragedy.
Never said, I thought you were a good God, but this is terrible.
No. That's not to say that it wasn't terrible, but what I have learned is that God's ways are not our ways, and that he has purposes that we don't understand. But no, I haven't actually blamed him, and I think part of that is that I absolutely know that it was a blessing for Mum and Dad to go together. Because they were an incredibly close couple. And so that was a real blessing for them to go together. Harder for us, but a blessing for them.
I've read accounts where she used to turn up to the studio with him.
Frequently, yes.
As the main Channel 9 newsreader. And his wife is there with him.
Yes.
And they'll walk off hand in hand together after the bulletin.
Absolutely, yes, yes.
What a partnership.
Yes, yes. She was just an amazing support for Dad. Yeah, just incredible. They were an extremely devoted, loving couple, and Dad would include Mum in everything. So very special.
And the rest of the newsroom as well, no doubt.
Absolutely. They all...
Oh, here's Mrs. Naylor again.
Absolutely. Well, they all knew her by Moiree, and, you know, they all loved her and asked her what she was knitting that particular day because she would take her knitting with her.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
I mean, it seems a stupid question to ask, especially because I do this job as well as a TV newsreader and on such an occasion, but I'd love you to take us through some of your happier, fonder memories of your dad and your mum, for that matter.
Mm.
It is kind of a weird thing to have your dad as a TV newsreader, I know that.
Yes, yes, you absolutely would know that. Certainly not as a lot of other children grow up. I probably wasn't that aware of the difference in Dad's job. Through primary school, you just sort of accepted, oh, well, there he is, you know, on the screen, and that's what he does for a job.
And my kids have said, I used to think everybody else's mums and dads were on television as well.
Exactly.
But then there comes that moment when you realise that that's not the case.
Absolutely. And I can laugh about this situation when I first started at secondary school, and I had actually joined the choir, and my girlfriend said, oh, performing at a large town hall. Your dad's comparing it. And I went, you are joking. You've got to be kidding me. She said, no, he is. I said, no, that can't be.
He's such a dad.
Please, no. Anyway, I had good reason to be concerned because we raced after the music teacher and she said, yeah, and I don't think she'd even made that connection with me. So I'm sort of thinking, oh, please, no. Anyway, we get to this concert and Dad in true form, as we're up there about to do the next song, announces to the entire large town hall that he knew what the next song was because I was in the choir and I had spent the entire morning ringing friends because I had forgotten the words of the song, had no idea, and that I was depending on the girls. So she really has no idea what the words of this song are.
Dad.
And I'm sitting there under my breath going, he's in big trouble when I get home. Everyone was just in hysterics. I remember looking up at the principal and he was just in hysterics.
Earth swallow me up.
It was. And then what made it even worse was my girlfriend's mum said at the end of the concert, she was sitting halfway down this huge town hall, she heard the lady behind her say, oh, that must be his daughter, the one that's going red. So, yes, that was a real reality check.
Thanks, Dad. Thanks a lot.
Yep. Yeah, and he was renowned for doing that sort of thing. So we later on decided, no, we're not going to go to things where he's comparing or whatever because he just took absolute delight in stirring family members.
On screen, he's always very managed, very disciplined, very precise.
Yes.
Away from the cameras, was that what he was like?
No, moving cattle, he wasn't like that. At all. That wasn't one of the most favoured family events, moving cattle.
Oh, really?
He would get a smidge stressed because we were never standing in the right place or doing the right thing or whatever, but we can laugh about it.
Because you guys grew up around the Kinglake area.
We did, yes. Mum and Dad always had a desire to live on a farm. And so they purchased the property at Kinglake West and just loved the lifestyle. And so we had cattle and, yeah, it's a beautiful property.
So what was he, what were they like away from all the television stuff?
Pretty normal, really.
Yep.
He didn't have airs and graces. He had a very amusing sense of humour. He loved his footy. He was passionate about footy,
the
Collingwood Magpies, so he'd be pretty impressed about winning a premiership. He loved his footy, cricket, loved cricket, and he'd get out, you know, when we'd have family get-togethers and he'd be kicking the footy and, you know, playing cricket and whatnot, so he loved that. Loved being on the tractor, working on the farm. Another real passion for him was boating. He had a beautiful yacht and Mum and he would go off. She was his crew member and, he was probably at his most relaxed when he was on the boat.
How did he regard the TV business and the TV news business?
He was always so, so grateful for the career that he had. He used to say he sort of almost fell into it. That wasn't something that he aspired to, but he sort of fell into it. And I just really, really admired his attitude to his fans because he was so aware that without them, he wouldn't have been where he was.
Yes.
But he was in the industry but not part of it. They didn't do a lot of socialising with people in the industry until we were a lot older and independent.
How did he regard your faith?
For a long time, he was extremely challenged by it and would really arc up, really, about Christianity, had a lot of questions. So we didn't have a lot of open discussions for a long time, but he absolutely knew about our faith. And if the opportunity came up, we'd share. But I came to see his attitude as a positive from a friend who said maybe it's God actually speaking to him and he's uncomfortable about that. But if he really thought absolutely nothing about God, he wouldn't react. So I did come to see it as a positive. And I knew it would take something major to change Dad's attitude.
And it did, didn't it? In the months before he died.
Amazingly. When Matt died, that was the thing that really made Dad stop and think.
Matt's your brother.
My youngest brother, yeah. Yes. Yeah. Who he was very close to, and they lived close by, and yes. Owen, my husband, went with Dad to look for somewhere for the memorial, and we knew we'd need somewhere really large because Matt lived in the area and was, you know, very popular. And I remember him coming home and he said to me, "You'll never guess what happened today." And I said, "What?" He said, "I just had the most amazing conversation with your dad for about an hour and a half." And he said, "It was all about God, our faith, Christianity." And he said, "And your dad was the one asking all the questions." And I was just so thrilled about that. And then it was a gradual sort of drawing him to God. And 2 days before he died, I think God just spoke so powerfully to Dad. He went to a funeral and he came home with the card from the funeral, and we were there that evening, and he showed me the words and he was of this poem, "Miss Me," that was in the card, and he was so taken by the words and kept going on and on and on about it.
These are words that you still carry to this day.
Absolutely. I carry them with their photo with me all the time.
Would you mind reading it for us?
No, I'd love to. It's called "Miss Me." When I come to the end of the road and the sun has set for me, I want no rights in a gloom-filled room. Why cry for a soul set free? Miss me a little, but not too long, and not with your head bowed low. Remember the love that we once shared. Miss me, but let me go. Now, this next verse is what he normally would have arced up about, but he was so taken by it. It says, "For this is a journey that we all must take, and each must go alone. It's all part of the Master's plan, a step on the road to home. When you're lonely and sick of heart, go to the friends we know and lose your sorrows in doing good deeds. Miss me, but let me go."
And this is just before he died.
2 days before. It was as though God was preparing him for what was to come. It's just amazing. So I have a peace that he's with the Lord. And Mum, because he would have definitely shared it with Mum. Yeah, just amazing.
Jane Bale, it's been a privilege to meet you and speak with you. I'm sure our entire audience across Australia thinks the same. Thank you so much indeed for joining us on Open House.
Thank you, Lee. It's been wonderful to be able to share with you, so thank you.
And all the best for a couple of days' time.
Thank you very much.
We hope you enjoyed this Open House podcast. Thanks to Christian Super and Real World Technology Solutions. To hear more from Open House, visit openhousecommunity.com.au.